course. So I say, you know, there's no way this horse is going to live. My vet is at a golf tournament. It's the 4th of July. And I said, well, you know, we're going to have to put her in the trailer and get her out of here. I mean, that's what we're going to have to do. And I can't imagine that she's going to make it even to where we're going, to our vice president's farm. We get her there. I call my vet. And I'm like, Chad? He's like, I'm at a golf tournament. I'm like, I hate that for you. But you've got to get down here. You've got to come now. And he comes out and he says, this horse is dead. It will not live. It can't, Tania. She cannot survive this. She was down. We put her in a sling. Her skin fell off. And this sounds terrible, but the horse was so full of life once we hydrated her in 12 hours. I said, well, let's try. Let's see. In 3 months, her name is Scarlett. Her video has been seen over a million times on YouTube. In 3 months' time, she was rehabilitated. We rode her. She was, the difference in the animal was unbelievable. And so Scarlett was the point where I knew that you can't say the horse is too far gone just based on body condition, because no one would have looked at her and said, this horse will ever make it. She was in the sling for about on and off for a week, but she's rehabbed. She's sound. She was only 11 years old at the time. She lives at a beautiful farm in Lewisburg. She's the person's riding partner. She's never had another moment of issues. No soundness issues, no health issues, no long-term problems. And so, but her story is just, it's one of kind of defying the odds. And I was able to record it in a way I sometimes can't. You know, there's so much video footage and so many pictures, and she's the only horse that we've ever had to put in a sling. And so it just overall paints a picture of just this unbelievable recovery. And it's our most popular story. It's where, you know, I think that things change as far as people having heard of us, because there aren't a lot of stories comparable out there with a horse recovering like that.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. That is incredible.
The Fabio part will help you remember it, though.
For sure. Absolutely. Right. I mean, that's...
Oh, goodness.
That's terrible, but that's... Yeah. Wow.
Those pigeons, though.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So what's the average sort of horse that that you guys take in through Heart of Phoenix?
I would say the average horse is a pinto gated horse of about age 4 that has never had any training.
Ah.
I mean, that's the theme of this year. Now, in other times past, it's been a different theme, but this year we have been full of the gated, young, spotted things, you know?
Okay.
And that's been good because this is gated horse country and people like flash, and it doesn't mean much to me personally, but it is, and that's, you know, a nice age where they, you know, people, if they're looking to adopt, that's, you know, pretty good for us. They're coming in starving, but they're, you know, younger, they're easier to turn around, and they're gated, and that makes people happy in this area. So
Yeah. That's
what we're looking at this year. We don't get a lot of draft horses. We don't get a lot of thoroughbreds. We don't get a lot of quarter horses here. It's mostly gated or the standard breds sometimes.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. So now, how does Heart of Phoenix acquire funding? Is this all through private donations? Do you guys have fundraisers that people need to know about? How does that work?
We are funded about 90% by private donors, and it's not by major donors mostly. It's lots of moderate to small donors that have been with us on and off, you know, for a while. We do fundraisers. We have, the show has always been a fundraiser for us, and now we've combined it with the trainer face-off. We do a trail ride at Lake Vesuvius in Ohio, opening trail weekend in April every year, and that's a, you know, that's a fundraiser that usually has a nice turnout. And then we do an end-of-the-year ball. Last year was a masquerade, and that's a really major fundraiser for us. So it's basically come out, be fancy, take part in the silent auction, and that's really a nice event that is in Milton, West Virginia. So those were our three major fundraisers. We get a very small amount of grant funding depending on what we apply for and what we gain each year. But mostly it's individual donors that are donating $20 a month. And it's just amazing how much we can do with the donation level that we have. And we're always, you know, trying to tell people, don't ever assume what you can give is not enough, because this rescue, everything you see that happens is mostly because of a lot of $20 a month donations.
Gotcha.
And
gotcha.
So that's just
proof
so important.
That every little bit helps.
I mean, it changes everything. I mean, you know, it's, I was reminding people today on our page, someone chimed in that we have 25,000 people on our page. And what if all of those people were $10 a month donors? What we could do. And it made me just remind people in a post, you know, you don't have to have a lot to give, but it's believing that it matters and taking that step. Because if I can't convince those, you know, if I can't convince you to give, right, then I'm probably not convincing others to. So it's just really letting people know a little bit can change everything, because that means lots of people have heard those words and thought, you know, I can do something.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Well, that is awesome. That is awesome. So, all right. So let me go into, I've got some wrap up questions that I'd love to ask, unless you have anything else that you want to touch on.
I think I have said all the words I had.
I don't believe you. I don't believe you. We've had dinner enough times and we've hung out. I don't believe that that's all the words.
I'm trying to not be obnoxious about it and not dominate all the conversation.
There you go. There you go. So Facebook actually kicked off our broadcast at an hour, and we had to restart in the middle of the Fabio story. So...
What a tragedy.
Well, I think the funniest of the parts were caught.
Good.
There was just a little bit in the middle that people are probably going to be emailing you to hear the rest of that story.
Oh, goodness.
But, okay, so let's see. If you would say that there's one specific thing that you would recommend for folks to focus on as a primary means of improving either their horsemanship or the care of their horses, what would you say that would be?
Well, I mean, if I'm talking about people improving themselves and it reflecting back on the horses, I think going to clinics like you host, I think really not letting educational opportunities pass them by, mm-hmm. really remembering that you're always going to have to be learning forever. Don't ever assume or make the statement that I hear too often, well, I've been riding since, I don't care how long you've been riding.
Right.
There's always something to learn, and really looking around and putting a real focus on continuing your education. One of our volunteers, Susan Sunday, is 70, and she's been riding her entire life, and I've never heard anybody that's more enthusiastic, at least as far as when she hears of a clinic, she's like, are we going? And really just have that kind of attitude. So just focusing on, assume you've not learned enough and really try to continue education. If we're talking about equine care, the thing that I tell people is float your horse's teeth.
Proper
all
dental
the time.
Care.
Oh,
interesting that that's one of the same things I preach about quite a bit.
I mean, you know, and I think for people to understand how bad it can get, they have to put their hands in the mouths of the horse's, you know, mouth. My hand has been in, and see what can happen when you don't. And age is no factor. Age has nothing to do with it, and kind of keep that in your mind, because your horse is 3 or 6 means nothing.
Right.
Dental care and making sure the person working on your horse's teeth is really an educated equine dentist.
Yes.
I can't imagine the things that really have happened to horses and people because a mouth was neglected.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I know I see so many behavior challenges that are the result of poor dental maintenance. So many, honestly, it comes down to we see mild to moderate lamenesses even as a result of the horse compensating because of the jaw being crooked or the teeth being, you know, imbalanced, so it causes the horses to hold their head a certain way or their neck a certain way, and that travels the whole way through the body. So that's one of the primary things that I preach to about riders with their horsemanship and some of the challenges that they have. You know, the dental care is so easily overlooked, and it's one of the most important pieces.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I think that I've pushed that maybe more than any type of care. Yeah. is dentistry.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. If you could ride with anyone, past or present, who would it be and why?
Well, that's a terrible question for me because I really don't ride horses, Patrick.
I knew we were going to end up going there.
We had to go there. It's a funny thing. I, as a kid, wanted nothing more than to ride, and I was the average horse crazy girl, and I really was never given an opportunity to be to ride a lot well. You know, I rode because my grandfather was a horse trader. And I've been to every auction that was ever held in the tri-state area, and I've been on many a dangerous little stud pony. But what happened was, my connection to horses was this idea that I wanted to ride. And instead of spending the last 10 years learning to really be a rider, I've learned how to rescue them and how to hopefully facilitate them ending up in better homes. And that just went on a back burner. And I just lost that connection over the years. I do ride if I have to evaluate a horse, but I just, and it kind of sounds discouraging, I want everyone else to ride because we need homes for these horses, but I just ended up in a situation where I stopped even thinking about horses and riding. I just thought about horses and homes and how do we get them into homes and how do we make sure that they end up safe and that people end up better that really have the time, you know, if that's their desire. And so I just, I couldn't say anymore because that's just, horses have become something different for me, you know. So all the rest of the team ride and enjoy it though. I lost that connection somewhere, and I can't say that if I was ever not covered up in rescue that I wouldn't come back to that, but it's just not been something for me in the last decade, unless it's just important that the horse be evaluated.
Right. So then you'd just be happy to ride with anybody.
I mean, just anybody. I would feel broken the next day. I would feel broken and be in a hospital bed. So, you know, but we have the horse show, we have the trail event. I don't ever ride for those. I'm there, I'm working, and it's just something that the opportunity to do it kind of slipped far away from me. And I believe you should be a considerate rider and continually educating yourself. And until I could do that and really be the kind of rider I would want to be, I think I'm serving horses better, facilitating rescue and stuff like that. So that's where I've left it for now.
Well, that makes good sense to me. That makes good sense. Okay, so what is your personal definition of horsemanship?
I think that it's partnership. I think that it's partnership. I think it's like a marriage. I think it's where you really are thinking of the other being and what's working for them and wanting to be better, to make them better. And all of that is just partnership. And if it's one-sided, and because it can go either way, and I'm sure you see this, you can let the horse take advantage of you, mm-hmm. and make the horse belligerent and dangerous and unhappy as well, or you can take advantage of the horse. I mean, but I really think partnership is what I see, and making it an actual relationship. You know, there's a time where a horse retires and it's just a pasture ornament, and it's happy to be that, and they earn that. And at that point, they, I guess, can do whatever they want. But, you know, to me, horsemanship is a partnership.
Partnership. I like it. Okay. How can folks find out more about Heart of Phoenix Equine Rescue?
they can go to so many different venues. We're just all over the place. Now, online, we're on YouTube. We have some really tremendous videos on there. We're at WV Horse Rescue on YouTube. And then the website is wvhorserescue.org. We have hundreds of blogs on heartofphoenix.org. So that's our blog. Okay. And then we're on social media as Heart of Phoenix all over. And we share different things based on what social media you're on. So on Instagram, it's a little different than on Facebook. So it's worth following all of it, as well as the blogs. The content is different on everything. So gotcha. You get that home. You're really immersed in Heart of Phoenix if you follow all of it.
Well, that's fantastic. That's great, because every avenue kind of lends itself to a different type of content. So that's great that you guys are utilizing that to the best of its, you know, of its native capability.
At least as much as I can be tech savvy, which I think we learned earlier, maybe I'm challenged, but as much as I can give to those avenues, we put it out there.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And I'm going to do my best to link up, and I'm going to have to ask for your help in this, to link up all of your accounts where everybody can find you in these in the broadcast notes here, in the comment section on the audio here. So, the last question, I don't know if you've had a chance to catch any of the videos that I do or any of these audios that I've been doing, but at the end of all of these, we do a question of the day, and the catch is, anytime I have a guest, the guest gets to ask the question of the day, and it can be anything you want to ask. There's no matter what you want to ask. It's no limits. What is our question of the day? Now you're on the spot.
I will ask a question that has an answer within the question. Where are the most fun people to host a clinic with that you've ever been?
Oh, nice. I like that.
I didn't lead that question. It wasn't intended.
No, that was good though. That was great though. I love even in my own clinics asking people that question, because there's so many different folks out there to ride with. And honestly, I've ridden with some folks that I've been recommended through riders at my own clinics like that. So that's awesome. All right, gang, you heard that. The question of the day, who are the most fun, sorry, Tania, rephrase that one again for me.
The most fun folks that you ever hosted a clinic with.
There you go. The most fun folks you've ever hosted a clinic with. Please give us your answers in the comments section below this live audio. I'm looking forward, as I know Tania is looking forward to reading your answers. Gang, I want to thank you for tuning in for episode number 7 of Talking About Horses. And Tania, thank you so, so much for joining us for this audio broadcast. This has been a lot of fun.
You're welcome. Lots of fun. Thanks for having us.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you. And again, gang, I must apologize. Somehow I am just tech savvy enough to not know about a new time limit that has been put on these audio broadcasts, and we were kicked over at the 1 hour mark. So this broadcast is going to be uploaded in 2 segments. Please remember, if you've missed any of it, you will be able to access both pieces of this broadcast through Facebook, through YouTube, or by streaming from iTunes. And if you're listening from iTunes, be sure to give us a rating and a review. Don't forget, tune in next week while I interview international coach from Australia, my friend Colleen Kelly. And we will catch you guys for that next week. Thanks so much.